This is the No Long Twos podcast. I'm your host, Mike Zavagno. Some news for you guys this week. We are proud to announce that we are the newest member of the Almighty Baller Network hosted by Chris Axman. I wanted to take a minute to personally thank Chris for reaching out to me and inviting the No Long Twos podcast to join the Almighty Baller Network. We're extremely excited to be a part of this venture. We really think that it will be a huge step for us in this process. And if you're a new listener, welcome. We're really happy to have you. We hope that you really like our stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at mzavagno11. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you'd like to hear. We're going to try to dig deep into the numbers on this show and really bring you the NBA from a numerical perspective. All aboard! Welcome to this week's edition of the No Long Twos podcast. I am back here in Philly in the lab with Jake Hurley. It's 2017. What's going on?
Not too much. Definitely glad to be back in Philly, back in the lab. Last time we came to you guys was before Christmas, if you'll remember. Actually, the night before my birthday. But I know we were both home for Christmas. You just got back from D.C. recently. I just got back from spending New Year's Eve in New Jersey. So I think we're both kind of glad to be back home, maybe a little bit settled in after a long break for, I think, the both of us.
Yes, indeed. And one of those things that happened over break is that our good friend Connor Deckard was able to get us access to Synergy Sports data. So shout out Connor Deckard. I've been using that a lot recently to kind of look more into the numbers. And so we wanted to bring some of that to you. Really starting off with the Cavs and that Christmas Day game that we previewed on the last episode. Obviously, we're a little bit removed from that, so we won't touch on it too much, but kind of rather touch on what the Cavs did in the month of December, because I think it was extremely impressive. And the guy who I think was probably the most impressive was Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, Kyrie's definitely had a pretty solid season to this point, but in his past 7 to 10 games or so, he's really stepped up even more. He's had 10 or more assists in 5 of his last 7 games, and I know Kyrie's received a lot of criticism throughout his early career that he's not a great passer, he's not a true point guard, that he needs to be more of a true point guard. I know he was called out by LeBron last year after he had a 0 assist game, basically that's unacceptable for your team's point guard. And Kyrie's not a true facilitator like a lot of people. He is going to want to get his own shot a lot of times. But what he's done basically the last 7 games is astounding. And I mean, he's been on another level. He's making passes. I know we'll text in games that he's making passes now this year that he would never make last year. He would try and finish tough shots at the rim basically in traffic. But now when he draws those 2-3 defenders at the rim, he's just dishing it off to Tristan Thompson right there under the basket for an easy dunk.
Yeah, Kyrie averaged 7.8 assists in the month of December, which I'm not entirely sure, but it might be the highest month of his entire career. He's posting double-doubles, like we said, in 5 of the last 7. And when I'm watching the film, I think the thing that I'm seeing differently, like you're saying, is that his head is up off the bounce much more than it has been in previous years. And I know Coach Lou touched on it in a pregame interview, I think it was a couple games ago, where he said that Kyrie's really looking to be a playmaker off of the dribble. And I think that is a major difference and a major shift that we've seen recently. I know Zach Lowe touched on it in the 10 things that he likes and didn't like about the overpassing out to threes. But what Kyrie's been able to do is when he's drawn multiple defenders at the rim, he's finding guys in the corner or in the opposite wing for threes, and these are wide open shots and they're good looks for this Cavs team.
Yeah, Kyrie's a guy who draws really similar type defenses when he drives to guys like James Harden or guys like Russell Westbrook, but the difference there is that unlike Russ, he's not violently attacking the rim. Unlike Harden, he's not specifically looking for a foul. He's really driving to either finish a tough layup, or he's surrounded by great shooters on this Cleveland Cavaliers team. Obviously surrounded by shooters like Channing Frye, recently especially Kevin Love, and one guy who's really benefited from Kyrie's little bit of a revival as far as his driving kick game and dishing to threes has been LeBron James.
LeBron shot 40% from three in the month of December, 39% in the month of November. He's at 38% on the season, which is not something that we saw from LeBron last year. People talked about how maybe his jumper left him. This year, it's been a totally different story. He's shooting 43% on catch and shoot, which is the same as Steph Curry, and 30th overall in the NBA, and then 56% on unguarded catch and shoot, which is good for 11th best in the NBA. That's an 80% effective field goal percentage. So essentially, almost every time LeBron's getting a catch and shoot opportunity, it's going down.
Yeah, and that's definitely something, like you just mentioned, that last year we did not see that from LeBron. His jumper kind of looked broken. No one was respecting him, especially in the finals in Golden State. They were almost playing five in the paint whenever LeBron would catch it at the top of the key. They would guard him with Iguodala or Dre, just really try and cover him with length, not respect his shot at all, prevent him from going into those passing lanes. But now at this point, with the way that he's shooting, teams have to respect that, and he's not knocking down not only wide open jumpers, but he's knocking down tough jumpers off threes as well. I know that you mentioned two of his stats as far as catch and shoot, guarded and unguarded. In the month of December, he also shot 55% on catch and shoot threes at a little over two a game. And so he's really kind of stepping out more, showing this side of his game that we definitely saw in Miami, probably when he was at his peak. But definitely the league needs to be on the lookout if this is going to be the LeBron James going forward.
I mean, the Cavs are unguardable if LeBron James is making 55% of catch-and-shoot threes. That's a completely different level than anything we've ever seen. And I know that this happened in the Golden State game, and I've seen it a couple times on film recently, is that the Cavs are running a play that they've run for J.R. Smith frequently, that they're actually now running for LeBron in some situations. I've heard it called different names. It's basically an Iverson cut where Kyrie will get the ball and Tristan Thompson will set him a slight screen going towards the corner, and then Thompson will come back and hammer LeBron's man. LeBron's coming right to left, catching that, and he's getting wide open threes. But this year, like we said, he's knocking those down. That was a play that they were running for J.R. Smith. All of a sudden, that's LeBron James in that spot. And what's going to happen is if LeBron keeps knocking these shots down, he's going to have a much easier time driving to the hoop and finding shooters. One of the things that we've seen is that he has 230 assists going into tonight's game against the Pelicans. 131 of them have been for threes. That's 57% of his assists have resulted in Cavs three-pointers, which is the highest percentage of any player in the NBA.
Yeah, LeBron's really at a different level, I would say, not necessarily higher than he's been in the past couple years or even in his years with Miami, but just the way he's playing and the way he's getting his numbers is just different. I mean, you watch the game and you can tell that he's not driving as much. He is driving a lot. He's getting out in transition quite a bit this year. He's the second best transition player in the NBA behind only Jimmy Butler, but he's really trying to create a lot of threes for other guys. His scoring is down a little bit, only a tick, but granted, he's one of those guys who he's either maintained or improved his scoring every single year since he's been in the league. He may not do that this year, but his stats all around the board, especially shooting, he's also had his highest assist average of his career so far this year. So the way that LeBron's going and getting his numbers this year, it's just different, and you can tell just how well the Cavs have played so far this year, and especially in the month of December, basically culminating in that Golden State win.
Yeah, and another guy who had an awesome month of December is Kevin Love. And the big three, I would say, is playing the best it has in the 3 years that they've been together. Love averaged 22.7 points, 10.9 rebounds. He shot 40% from three in the month of December. And he is shooting 45% essentially on catch and shoot situations, which is good for fifth in the NBA. Another guy on the Cavs, Channing Frye, is actually the second best catch and shooter in the NBA. And so what we're essentially seeing is that this team has the offensive firepower and the offensive weapons surrounding LeBron and surrounding Kyrie, who, like we said, is really showing something different as a passer right now. that they can essentially beat you with so many different lineup combinations. Kyrie has been out the last two games after tweaking a hamstring in the Boston game, but we've seen guys like Jordan McRae and Kay Felder able to step up into those roles last game. We'll see how it finishes out tonight, but this is a Cavs team that is essentially optimized for what I would call LeBron James' best talent, and that's passing.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially with Kevin Love's resurgence as a shooter this year. We kind of touched on it a little bit in our last podcast right before the Christmas Day game, and then people talked about it obviously going into the finals last year. Is Kevin Love going to be able to play, stay on the floor, and basically have any success at all against Golden State? And we saw it really translate into the game this year where he had the best plus-minus in that game. He had the best plus-minus in Game 7. He's going to be able to stay on the floor for basically two reasons. He's going to rebound well against this Warriors team where we saw that that's definitely a weak spot for them. It's something that we touched on. It's where an area where really the Cavs look to attack them. And also now that he's knocking down 40% from three, he's just basically shooting lights out at this point. I was definitely someone who was on the fat Kevin Love train. I miss fat Kevin Love from Minnesota when he would operate from the elbow and get basically 20 and 15 almost every single night. But I might be a skinny, handsome Banana Republic Kevin Love guy now, especially if he's going to keep shooting this way, especially getting us going early in games. He's missed our first quarter for us. Kyrie's missed our third quarter, or missed our fourth quarter, I should say. LeBron basically carries us the rest of the way when we need him. But really, this is definitely the best version of the Cavs we've seen thus far, and they're really peaking, not necessarily at the right time, but they're really starting to peak and come together as a team, especially with JR out, and we definitely love to see that.
Yeah, the one thing that I did see in that Warriors game, and you've kind of seen a little bit throughout the month of December, is that the Cavs are lacking depth pieces right now because of that JR injury, as well as the dead contracts that are Mo Williams and Birdman. So the Cavs had to play Kyrie and LeBron 40 minutes a game, essentially, in the month of December. I don't think that that's sustainable. I know that everybody talks about LeBron going on his vacation or whatever you want to say. I'm not entirely sure whether or not that will happen, but the Cavs do need another wing piece. I would like it to be someone with length who can, you know, match up against some of the Warriors guys. We've talked briefly about PJ Tucker. James Johnson from Miami is another interesting candidate. I know that the Hawks have talked a little bit about their fire sale, and that's something that we'll touch on a bit later, but we don't want to get too deep into it right now because we're still a little bit away from the trade deadline, and we'll definitely dig deeper into trade targets as we get closer. But the Cavs do need to add some depth on the wing, and I think that that's the one thing that's really missing between now and, you know, potentially getting into the playoffs and trying to make another run at a repeat.
Moving on from the best team and the best player in the East to a guy who some people are starting to kind of murmur that he might be the second best player in the East, and that's Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis is a guy that we've talked about a decent amount this year, and I think rightfully so, because he's either a first-team or second-team All-NBA forward right now. In my opinion, should be starting the East All-Star game alongside LeBron James and Jimmy Butler at the three forward slots. I'm not entirely sure if he'll end up being a center in there, but those have clearly been the top three players at the forwards position in the East. And in the month of December, Giannis posted 24.8 points per game, 9.3 rebounds per game, and 5.9 assists per game. But I think the most important thing for him is that he shot 37% from three on 41 attempts.
Yeah, and that's something that's really kind of starting to develop in his game. Everyone sees him get out in transition. According to Synergy, he's averaging about 1.25 points per possession in transition, which is really obviously one of the biggest parts of his game that you see, taking one dribble from half court and then being at the rim by someone Euro stepping or Euro freaking, whatever you want to call his
the gyro step.
Yeah, whatever his absurd wingspan and stride are. But what's really starting to come along with his game is definitely the shooting aspect. And I know that you just wanted to talk about it a little bit as well, how good he's been cutting this year.
Yeah, he's scoring about 1.56 points per possession on cuts, which is top 10 in the NBA. essentially what that means and what you really see on the film is that he's able to beat his defender backdoor or, you know, cross his defender's face, get the ball off of the catch. And when he catches the ball in the paint, it's almost end of story for the opposing team because he is getting the ball near the basket. And like you said, with that long wingspan, it's almost going in every time. And these are all two-point attempts, and that's 1.57 points per possession, which is basically making almost all of these shots. And so the Bucks are an incredibly intriguing team, as we've spoken about, because Giannis is a guy who's gotten better every single year. It's pretty clear at this point that he has a ceiling of a top-five player in this league. Jabari Parker is a guy who's improved significantly this year. Jabari works a lot in the post. He really likes to get to that baseline shoulder from the left block. So he wants you to think that he's going over to his right hand, gets you back, spins you baseline, puts you on his left, finishing with the left. And, you know, this is a Bucks team that may have the highest ceiling of any contender to the Cavs in the East long term, because you have those two guys plus Chris Middleton when he comes back, whether that's late this year or next year. He's obviously a knockdown shooter, a guy who many would say was their second best player last year, and then a rookie in Malcolm Brogdon, who's been excellent defensively.
Yeah, Malcolm Brogdon, a.k.a. Baby Giannis, a.k.a. the nickname he received from Giannis. Definitely love that. The Bucks are a team, obviously, we've talked about a bit about as well. They struggle a bit with consistency, not a great shooting team. They're led at the point guard spot by the great Matt Dellavedova. Definitely miss him in Cleveland. But yeah, the Bucks are definitely solid. As you mentioned, their future ceiling is definitely extremely high, with Giannis being probably a top 10 player in the NBA in the next year or so. One area where I would like to see him develop a little bit more is as far as his post game. Obviously, he's great finishing at the rim. He's great finishing in transition. For all intents and purposes, he's basically 7 feet tall, but he doesn't have a great feel for being in the post. He has a great feel for the game of basketball, but he's great at finishing at the rim, but not necessarily once he catches in the post. So definitely will be something that we keep an eye out on.
Another guy that we like to talk about on this program, and a guy who, like I said, was one of my highest targets at the beginning of the year, struggled a little bit out of the gate, and that's Nikola Jokic. He had an impressive month of December, averaging 17 points, 8.8 rebounds, 4.9 assists, but he's only playing 26 minutes a night. So when you take that out to his per 36 numbers, he averaged 7 assists a night in December. This guy's 7 feet tall. He has a 24.3% assist rate, which is second amongst all big men. The only guy better than that is Mason Plumlee. Jokic had a 72% true shooting percentage in the month of December, and he's a guy who, in my opinion, is clearly the Nuggets' best player. Mike Malone didn't realize that for the first couple months. I think he's starting to come around to that idea. And now that Gary Harris is healthy, this Nuggets team, when they're starting Jokic alongside Wilson Chandler, Danilo Gallinari, Gary Harris, and Emmanuel Mudiay, is at least interesting. And the bottom of the West is so bad that they could still easily be a playoff team.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the West this year is really putrid just as far as the quote-unquote race for the eighth seed has been. The Nuggets are definitely a team that could sneak in. Obviously, with Wilson Chandler healthy, playing some of the best basketball of his career at this point. Jokic, obviously a great playmaker from that center position. He loves to operate out of the high post and really the top of the key as well. He's a guy who can handle in transition. He's an incredible passer, to say the absolute least. He makes passes that you only see guys really like LeBron or Chris Paul and a little bit Giannis like kind of even think of making, and he's able to make them with great deft. As you mentioned, Mike Malone has hesitated to play him big minutes. I think Mike Malone's too busy dreaming of still coaching DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento. But Jokic obviously isn't a guy like Boogie. He's not going to get his numbers the exact same way, but he's a similar talent to DeMarcus Cousins, where he can be the guy. You can run your offense through him, whether it's at the low post, the high post. He can catch and shoot threes. He's going to be able to do a lot of stuff similar to DeMarcus Cousins, so it'd be nice to see if Mike Malone started using him a little bit more like DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, we were just watching film of his best assists from the month of December. Shout out to Nick Scarria for putting that together. And we met at the Warriors-Cavs game, so that was pretty cool. But one of the things that you really see on that film is that Jokic sees passing lanes, especially with guys going backdoor, better than most any big man in this league. He's able to hit guys on almost impossible passes, as you said, and he really is the definition of a playmaker at that center spot. And the Nuggets are going to be an interesting team to watch in the upcoming months because of Wilson Chandler and Danilo Gallinari and their contract situations. Both of those guys could be trade targets if the Nuggets do decide to go that route and kind of try to sell things off, get more young assets, and build for the future. They also could make that push for the playoffs. Obviously, the worst teams in the conference in the West are only 4.5 games out of the 8 seed. So if the Nuggets wanted to potentially get in the playoffs, maybe get their young guys' experience against the Warriors, it would probably be a 4-game series. But some of the time, you like to see your guys get that experience. So the Nuggets can really go in either direction. One of the things that this synergy data has allowed me to do is really take a deeper look into the ways that some of these players operate and the skill sets that they have. And so today I was actually able to dive into some of Kyle Lowry's numbers from this year, and I wasn't really expecting them to be as impressive as they were. Kyle Lowry is having a shooting season that really rivals Stephen Curry's shooting season last year, which many called the greatest of all time. I'm not sitting here trying to compare Kyle Lowry as a shooter to Steph Curry, but the way that he's scoring the basketball is pretty impressive this year. He actually shot 50% from three in the month of December. He's now at 46% from three on the season. Curry through December of last year only at 45%. And one of the places that Lowry really excels is in the catch and shoot.
Yeah, Lowry's been incredible as far as catch and shoot goes this year. He's a guy that we actually didn't talk a lot about early in the season. We did talk about the Raptors a bit. We talked about DeMar DeRozan quite a bit with his impressive start. But Kyle Lowry really kind of flew under the radar. He wasn't really in the Eastern Conference top point guard discussion. And then the month of December rolls along, and he's having arguably the best month of December of any player in the league. So it's really been astounding what he's been able to do. We've talked about it a little bit recently, just as far as him buoying those Raptors bench units that have just absolutely crushed teams lately at Spursian bench levels. But the way he's doing it has really impressed me, especially with the way he's shooting. He's one of the toughest guys in the league, despite the fact that he's skinny Kyle Lowry now. But he's still got that big old butt. But really just love what he's done in the month of December and leading this Raptors team.
Yeah, he averaged 24 points a game in the month, 7.1 assists. He had a 73% true shooting percentage, and he was a plus 18.1 net rating. As you talked about, those Lowry and bench units are really killer. And in the catch and shoot, he's shooting 49%. Overall, which is a 73% effective field goal percentage, and unguarded, he's shooting 58%, 87% effective field goal percentage, which is essentially just buckets. If he's not guarded in the catch and shoot, like, you might as well just count that. Last year, Steph Curry was 48.6% in the catch and shoot. Once again, Kyle Lowry, 49% right now. He's a guy that's just absolutely knocked down. He's leading that Raptors team. Last week in Utah, he essentially beat Utah himself with one of the best fourth quarters I've seen all year. He really has flown under the radar a bit, and he's the reason that the Raptors offense is playing at historic levels.
Yeah, and Kyle Lowry's a guy, he definitely doesn't shy away from the moment. I know that we watched a game last year. It wasn't in the playoffs. It was a game in the regular season in Toronto. I think the Raptors were either tied or the Raptors were down one or two. And we were sitting there watching the game, and you knew the Cavs were going to lose that game because Kyle Lowry was not going to let them lose. He scored over 40 points in that game, and that's really just the type of player he is. He made a little bit of a mini leap kind of 2 years ago. He had a similar season, probably a little bit better last year, and now he's really improving yet again and showing that he's going to be one of the top free agent targets this summer when it rolls around.
Yeah, Lowry really does his work in a variety of ways. In addition to being amazing in the catch and shoot, he's also the sixth best pick and roll ball handler in the league, both creating points for himself and with the passes. He's shooting 47% on pick and roll dribble jumpers, which, once again, better than Steph Curry's 45% last year. He's shooting 44% overall on all dribble jumpers. Steph Curry, 43% last year. And that was a skill of Curry's that we saw last season, where he would be in the pick and roll, attack bigs on the switch, get lateral movement to create space, and really knock down jumpers. And I think one of the things that we're noticing this year with a guy in Curry is that he's not making dribble jumpers in the same way. He's only shooting 33% in jumpers off the dribble, but only 29% in dribble jumpers in the pick and roll, but yet he's still at 43% in the catch and shoot. So you're not seeing things change for Curry in the catch and shoot, or really even in ISO, but it really is in those dribble jumper, pick and roll dribble jumper situations where he either is lacking the explosiveness a little bit with whatever's lingering from his knee injury, or just something is different. He's taking many fewer dribbles this year, and he's possessing the ball for nearly a minute less per game because of the addition of Kevin Durant. So some people have said that it's just a rhythm thing and he's not really been able to get into a rhythm, but the reason that Steph Curry isn't having a historic season is that dribble jumper, and that's something that Kyle Lowry's been excellent on this year.
Despite Kyle Lowry's great month of December and the Raptors' early season and recent season success, they are still chasing the Cleveland Cavaliers in the East. They're still the 2 seed right now. They are looking for a little bit of help still, especially at that 4 spot, starting Pascal Siakam and having Pat off the bench. And one spot where that may be coming soon, especially if the rumors might be true, as far as the Atlanta Hawks, and as we touched on a little bit earlier, their possible fire sale, despite being fifth in the Eastern Conference right now, is in Paul Millsap.
Yeah, Millsap this week, through his agent, I think essentially said that he wants to hit the open market in the offseason, and the Hawks are rumored to have come out and basically told people that they're willing to listen to offers on him. And one place that's really made sense for many people as a destination for Paul Millsap, even going into this season, is the Toronto Raptors, as they try to mount some team that can challenge the Cavs in the playoffs. And I've looked into that a little bit, just in terms of how Paul Millsap might fit into the Raptors' offense, and I think it's a little bit more tenuous than what people may think. Millsap is a guy who operates out of the post in 21% of his individual possessions, but the Raptors as a team really only post up DeMar DeRozan and Jonas Valanciunas to a lesser degree, but the Raptors only post up 6% of the time, and it's somewhere where you'd be interested to see whether or not they'd be willing to change their offense to let Millsap get more post touches. I think he is a good passer out of the post, but the Raptors' offense really does revolve around that Lowry pick and roll because he is so good in it. They run pick and rolls nearly 40% of the time. The Millsap has been a bottom 10% player as a role man this year. Most of what he's doing is in the pick and pop, where he's been terrible. And guys like Jonas Valanciunas and Bebe are pick and roll guys strictly. They're guys who are rolling hard to the cup, and they're getting those passes from Lowry, and they've both been effective. So those are two areas where I think it's interesting to see whether or not Paul Millsap actually fits into this Raptors team.
Yeah, from a talent perspective and a positional need perspective, it makes 100% sense for this Raptors team. But as you mentioned, the fit, not really sure that we see it. I think that a lot of teams are kind of the mind that talent will basically work itself out, whether the fit's there or not. Personally, I think that it'd probably be a great idea for the Raptors. Might be a decent idea for the Hawks as well. The Cavs have owned them the past several years, especially since LeBron's come back. It seems like a lot of teams in the East, basically outside of the Raptors and Celtics, are punting for the next X amount of years that LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love are in Cleveland, which for a lot of Eastern Conference teams, that probably makes sense. Not necessarily going full-blown tank like the Sixers, but just kind of trying to get a little bit better pieces than mid to late first round picks being in the playoffs doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But as far as the fit that you talked about with Millsap, he's a guy who I love. He's a guy who's perpetually underrated just as far as the league goes. He's a great rebounder, decent defender. He's a guy who we've seen try to defend LeBron in recent years in the playoffs. As far as the Raptors have gone, Damari Carroll has been basically their quote-unquote LeBron stopper recently. But he's a guy who even we talked a little bit about before today that Damari Carroll's kind of washed at this point. He looks really lost for this Raptors team. Doesn't look 100% healthy. So maybe Paul Millsap might be able to fill that need, might give them a little bit of a rejuvenation as far as that goes. But we'll definitely see in the coming weeks. What else you got there?
I think that an interesting thing to observe in this situation is that it would likely cost the Raptors a really impressive Terrence Ross in the deal. Ross has been excellent this season for them, and I think that the Hawks would want him back in any trade that they would be shipping off Paul Millsap, and that might be an issue for this Raptors team because Ross has significantly outplayed Damari Carroll. Ross is shooting 41% on jump shots this year, and he's in the top 10% of all players in spot-up situations. Turnover to Carroll, 34% on jump shots. He's below average in spot-up situations. So when Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are probing the paint, you have a guy like Terrence Ross out there, and he's much more knockdown than a guy like Damari Carroll, who just doesn't seem to be getting the same lift on his jumper. But that would be something that the Raptors would have to consider, is whether they want to give up Terrence Ross and they think that Millsap and Carroll can fit together. One lineup that I think would be very interesting is a Millsap and Patrick Patterson front court. It's obviously a little bit smaller, but Jonas Valanciunas is only playing close to 30 minutes a game anyway, so that is something that I think would be fairly successful. Millsap, as you said, very strong defender, does very well guarding the post. I think he's only giving up 0.56 points per post-up possession, which rates out as excellent per Synergy's data. And so he's a guy I think could handle many post players, maybe not the elite post players, but as the NBA kind of moves away from that anyways, that lineup could give the Raptors a lot of spacing to work with, especially around those DeRozan post-ups, who's their worst shooter on the floor.
Yeah, basically any move that the Raptors or Hawks might make is because of the Cleveland Cavaliers, especially when the Cavs go with a lineup, if they run out Kyrie, LeBron, Love, Tristan, and either possibly Channing Frye, that's not really a lineup you see very often, but JR when healthy, or DeAndre Liggins. In a situation where the Raptors do acquire Paul Millsap, it would be an interesting lineup to see him alongside Patrick Patterson, kind of as the de facto 4-5, without Valanciunas on the floor, so he doesn't have to try and chase around Tristan Thompson or Kevin Love. It definitely would be an interesting fit. I know that Millsap typically plays fairly well against the Cavs. He's a guy who's a great rebounder historically throughout his career, and a guy who can definitely help an offense as maybe the third option like he would be in Toronto, as opposed to maybe having to be the guy like he is in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think that we'll definitely get more into trades as the time comes when we near closer to the deadline. I think things are moving a little slower this year because of the uncertainty surrounding the CBA negotiations, and now that everything's signed and teams have had some time to review it, you'd expect some dominoes to fall. Whether it's Paul Millsap that's going to be the first domino, whether it's David Griffin pulling some of his wizardry, he's been active at basically every trade deadline since LeBron returned home. So you know that there are teams that want to and likely need to make a move, and it'll be interesting to see how those things end up falling and where the chips fit, and we'll definitely be looking out for that moving forward. But I think that does it for us this week. We really appreciate you joining us, and thanks for joining me again, Jake.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. Two things I did want to get off my chest. First, let me be the last to wish you a Happy New Year. And also, we did give a shout-out earlier in the show to Connor Deckard. Also, another shout-out to Connor Deckard. Congratulations on the engagement. Love to see that. Excited to have you and hopefully Fish out here in the next 2 weeks or so when Tulsa's in to play Temple. Definitely excited to have the secondary Banana Boat crew back in town. The lesser-known Banana Boat crew, but equally as impressive.
Yes, we look forward to that. It's been an exciting, 2016 essentially for us, being able to start this podcast, and we look forward to continuing to grow it in 2017, hopefully doing some more new cool stuff. And again, just wanted to take another opportunity to thank Chris Axman for reaching out to the No Long Twos podcast and bringing us aboard the almighty Ballin Network. I'm very excited. I think it's going to be a great partnership. Once again, you can follow me on Twitter at mzavagno11. Love to hear your thoughts thoughts on the podcast if you're a new or an old listener, as well as what you would like us to do in the future. So excited to start this journey on that network, and I think it will be an amazing start to 2017. Thank you again, Chris. Really appreciate everyone for continuing to tune in and continuing to help us out as we, you know, look forward on this journey. Trust the process.